Stage 1. Establishing a practice. 1. The goal for Stage 1 is to develop a regular meditation practice. Put all your effort into forming and holding a conscious intention to sit down and meditate for a set period every day, and to practice diligently for the duration of the sit. When your intentions are clear and strong, the appropriate actions naturally follow, and you'll find yourself regularly sitting down to meditate. If this doesn't happen, rather than chastising yourself and trying to force yourself to practice, work on strengthening your motivation and intentions instead. Practice goals for Stage 1. There are two goals for Stage 1. First, you will learn how to prepare for practice and to use a simple method to enter meditation gradually. Second, and more important, is to establish a consistent daily practice where you meditate to the best of your ability throughout every session. To succeed, you'll need to recognize the obstacles that stand in your way and create solutions. Mastering this stage provides you with the strong foundation you need to progress rapidly through the 10 stages. How to begin your practice. The basic practice used in this book is quite simple. Direct your attention toward a well-defined meditation object. Whenever your attention slips, redirect it back to that object. Repeat this as often as needed. Rather than jump right in, though, you'll start with two preliminary practices to help prepare your body and mind for a smooth transition to the meditation object. 6-point preparation for meditation. I recommend the following 6-point preparation to new students. You should prepare for meditation just as you would for other activities, by thinking and planning beforehand. Memorize these 6 points and go through them as soon as you sit down. You can even review them in your head while on the way to your meditation spot. They are motivation, goals, expectations, diligence, distractions, and posture. 1. Fire up your motivation. After you sit down, the first thing to do is to remind yourself why you've chosen to meditate. Perhaps it's to have a little more peace of mind and improve your mental skills. Or it could be to achieve awakening. Or maybe it's just because you know you'll feel better for the rest of the day if you meditate than if you don't. Don't judge your reasons as being good or bad. Just acknowledge and accept them as they are. Having a clear sense of purpose will fire up your motivation and help you deal with any feelings of restlessness or resistance. 2. Set reasonable goals. Goals give direction, and it's important they be realistic so you're not disappointed. Ask yourself what you hope to accomplish in this particular session. Think about the problems you've been working on in recent sits, and decide how you can best apply yourself to the practice today. Then choose a goal for this sit that's reasonable, given your recent progress. At first, your goals can be simple, such as not giving up and daydreaming, or remaining patient when your mind wanders or you get drowsy. Understanding the stages and which one you're at is a powerful tool for setting realistic goals, so periodically revisit the overview. 3. Beware of expectations. You should set goals and practice diligently to achieve them, but be careful of ambitious expectations about where you should be. You can easily set yourself up for disappointment. Resolve to hold the goals you've set very lightly, to find enjoyment in every meditation, no matter what happens, and to savor any achievement. Simply sitting down to practice is an accomplishment. There will be sessions where it's easy to focus. This is the fruit of your previous practice, but don't expect to notice obvious progress each time you sit. There will be plateaus where nothing seems to change for days or weeks. Today you may have less stability of attention or mindfulness than you did weeks or even months ago. That's normal, so stay relaxed. Make your effort diligent yet joyful. Don't get caught up in expectations. And always remember, There is no such thing as a bad meditation. 4. Commit to diligence. Diligence means engaging wholeheartedly in the practice rather than spending your time on the cushion, planning, or daydreaming. You will be tempted to think about things that are more interesting or important than the meditation object, problems to be solved, projects to plan, and fantasies to entertain. So commit not to indulge in these tempting distractions. Also, judging the quality of your practice can lead to doubt, giving rise to procrastination and resistance. Remind yourself that whenever resistance arises, the best way to overcome it is by simply continuing to practice. Resolve to practice diligently for the entire session, regardless of how your meditation goes. 5. Review potential distractions. It's important to know your state of mind before you begin to meditate. Perform a quick inventory of the things in your life that could come up as distractions, such as a problem at work or an argument with a friend. Check to see if your mind is occupied by any worries about the future, regrets about the past, doubts, or other annoyances. It will help to review the 5 hindrances described in the second interlude. Acknowledge these thoughts and emotions, whatever they are, and resolve to set them aside if they arise. You may not be wholly successful, but just setting the intention will make them easier to handle. 6. Adjust your posture. Before you begin, review your posture and get comfortable. Here's a checklist. Adjust any supports you use to help you sit comfortably. Your head, neck, and back should be aligned, leaning neither forward nor backward nor to the side. Your shoulders should be even and your hands level with each other so your muscles are balanced. Your lips should be closed, your teeth slightly apart, and your tongue against the roof of your mouth, with the tip against the back of your upper teeth. Start with your eyes closed and angled slightly downward, as though you were reading a book. This creates the least tension in your forehead and face. If you prefer, leave your eyes slightly open, with your gaze directed at the floor in front of you. Your eyes will move during meditation, but when you notice they've shifted, return them to where they were. With your lips closed, breathe through your nose in a natural way. It shouldn't feel controlled or forced. Relax and enjoy yourself. Scan your body for any tension and let it go. All the activity of meditation is in the mind, so the body should be like a lump of soft clay, solid and stable, but completely pliant. This helps keep physical distractions to a minimum. For more on how to sit, refer to The Right Posture later in this chapter. Sometimes new students say, "I seem to spend a lot of time just doing the preparation for practice. Is that a problem?" When I ask how the rest of their meditation went afterward, that usually answers the question. By the time you go through the 6 points, your mind will be well settled. The preparation also helps establish a consistent practice, free from resistance and the deliberate wasting of time. And it doesn't matter how long you spend on the preparation, because it, too, is a form of meditation, in which you still intentionally direct and sustain attention. If your mind wanders, bring it back using the same techniques we describe in the next section on breath meditation. After doing the preparation every day for a while, it will go much more quickly. Preparation for meditation. Motivation. Review your purpose for meditation. Be honest. Don't judge your reasons. Be aware and accept them. Example: I want more peace of mind. Goals. Decide what you hope to work out in this session. Set a reasonable goal for where you are in the stages. Keep it simple. Keep it small. Example: not to get annoyed when my mind wanders. Expectations. Bring to mind the dangers of expectations and be gentle with yourself. Find enjoyment in every meditation, no matter what happens. There is no such thing as a bad meditation. Diligence. Resolve to practice diligently for the entire session. Recall that the best way to overcome resistance is by simply continuing to practice without judging yourself. Distractions. Perform a quick inventory of things in your life that might come up to distract you. Acknowledge these thoughts and emotions, and resolve to set them aside if they do arise. You may not be wholly successful, but at least you have planted a seed, the intention not to let them dominate your mind. Posture. Review your posture and get comfortable. Attend to your supports, your head, neck, back, shoulders, lips, eyes, and breath. Relax and enjoy yourself. All the activity of meditation is in the mind, so the proper state for the body is like a lump of soft clay, solid and stable, but completely pliant. This will keep physical distractions to a minimum. The meditation object. A meditation object is something you intentionally choose to be the focus of your attention during meditation. Although you can choose just about anything, the breath is ideal for cultivating attention and mindfulness. First, the breath is always with you. Second, it allows you to be a completely passive observer. You don't need to do anything, such as repeat a mantra, generate a visualization, or rely on any special item like a candle, icon, or kasina. You can meditate on the breath at any opportunity, wherever you are, every day, even up to your dying breath. The breath also changes over time, becoming fainter as concentration deepens. This makes it suitable for developing powerful attention, since the details you focus on become ever more subtle as sensations grow less distinct. Likewise, the fact that sensations change continuously, moment by moment, is conducive to insight into the nature of impermanence. Yet the breath also constantly repeats itself over and over in the same pattern, making it suitable as a fixed, that is, relatively unchanging, meditation object for entering states of meditative absorption. Because of these different qualities, the breath is used as the basis for the practice of tranquility and insight, shamatha vipassana, dry insight practices, sukha vipassana, and meditative absorptions, jhana. Whenever we refer to the breath as the meditation object, we actually mean the sensations produced by breathing, not some visualization or idea of the breath going in and out. When I direct you to observe the breath in the chest or abdomen, I mean the sensations of movement, pressure, and touch occurring there as you breathe in and out. When I say the breath at the nose, I mean the sensations of temperature, pressure, and air moving on the skin anywhere around the tip of the nose, the rim, inside the nostrils, or on the upper lip just below the nostrils. Throughout the 10 stages, your meditation object will most often be the breath sensations at the nose, but not always. Some suggest using the sensations of rising and falling at the abdomen instead. Beginners often find the large movements of the abdomen easier to follow at first. But when the breath becomes very shallow, the coarser sensitivity of the abdomen can make it harder to detect the breath sensations. I recommend the nose because the nerve endings there are much more sensitive. Choose whatever area around the nostrils works best for you. Even though the breath has many benefits, the methods presented in the 10 stages can also be used with a visualized object, a mantra, or in loving-kindness practices. All the same principles can be employed in conjunction with the noting technique of the Mahasi-style Vipassana method, the breath concentration and body-scanning techniques of the Uba-Kin Goenka Vipassana method, or the uniquely systematic Vipassana of Shinzen Young. In each of these, you face the same problems of mind-wandering, distraction, and dullness, which the techniques here are designed to address. That said, not every meditation object leads to the final stages as surely as do the sensations of the breath. A gradual four-step transition to the meditation object. In this practice, you transition gently from the free-ranging attention of daily life to focusing on the breath at the nose. The transition is spread over four steps. In each, you define a specific domain or space in which you can allow your attention to range freely. Any object in the space can serve as the focus of your attention at any moment, meaning your focus just moves as it will. As you proceed from step to step, you further restrict the space in which attention is free to move, until you're finally focused on the sensations of the breath at the nose. But as you make this transition with attention, remember to always maintain peripheral awareness. Every step in the transition provides a good opportunity to learn to distinguish between attention and awareness. Treat this as a serious practice, not just as a nice way to start a meditation. Use it each time you sit down to meditate, especially if you're a beginner. As you move through these four steps, always remember to relax your body, calm your mind, and deliberately evoke feelings of contentment. It's like gradually settling into a spa. Continually notice any pleasant sensations, contributing to a sense of relaxation, well-being, and overall happiness. As you will learn, relaxation and happiness play an important role in the process of training the mind. Step 1. Focus on the present. First, close your eyes and spend a few moments becoming fully present. Take in everything presented to the senses. With your eyes closed, you'll find the two main sensory stimuli are sounds and sensations originating on or in the body. Open your peripheral awareness fully. Next, allow your attention to tune into and range freely among any of the sounds, bodily sensations, smells, or thoughts you may experience. Within this holistic panorama, the one limitation you place on movements of attention is to remain in the present, here and now. Staying present is extremely important. While noises and bodily sensations all occur in the here and now, thoughts about them, beyond just noticing and recognizing them, take you away from the present. So let your attention go to any sensations that attract it, but don't analyze or think about them. Observe bodily sensations objectively, not identifying with them as mine. Let your attention move as it will, drawn by the moment-to-moment arising and passing away of sensory objects within your field of conscious awareness. If you find a particular sensation to be pleasant, take a moment to enjoy it. Let that pleasure condition your mind toward a state of happiness in the present. Try to distinguish clearly between the subjective quality of pleasure and the sense object that triggered it, savoring the pleasure, not the sense object. If your mind reacts to something unpleasant, distinguish between that reaction and the object that produced it. Then let go of the reaction. You'll also be aware of all kinds of other mental activities, memories, thoughts about the future or things happening elsewhere, and so on. Expect this kind of activity to go on in your mind. Being fully present means being aware of it, but not engaging in its content. Disregard any thought that has nothing to do with the present moment. Even thoughts about the present should be approached cautiously, because they can quickly drag you away from the here and now. On the other hand, some thoughts, such as how to make your posture more comfortable, can help you settle into the present. In general, mindfully observing thoughts is tricky, so it's better to focus on sounds, smells, and physical sensations to avoid being hooked by thoughts. A helpful phrase to remember when dealing with distractions of any kind is, let it come, let it be, let it go. Don't try to suppress it, just let it come into peripheral awareness. Don't engage the distraction or focus attention on it, simply disregard it and let it be in the background, then let it go away by itself. This is a passive process. There is nothing to do but allow these objects to arise and pass away on their own, moment by moment. When you find your attention has been captured by a thought, just come back to the present. Step 2. Focus on bodily sensations. Once you've become fully present with every kind of sensory stimulus, limit your attention to bodily sensations. These include all physical sensations arising on or in the body, such as touch, pressure, warmth, coolness, movement, tingling, deep visceral sensations, like a rumbling in your stomach, and so forth. With your attention limited to bodily sensations, let everything else slip into the background of peripheral awareness. Nothing should be suppressed or excluded from your field of conscious awareness. Just let sounds, smells, and thoughts keep circulating in the background, but don't focus on them. Let them come, let them be, and let them go in peripheral awareness while you restrict all movements of attention to bodily sensations. Whenever you notice your attention going to a sound or thought, bring it back to the body. As you pay more attention to your body, release any tension you find and make final adjustments to your posture. Again, notice any pleasant sensations, distinguishing between the sensation as sensation and your mind's reaction to it, and spend a few moments enjoying the pleasure. These pleasant sensations might include feelings of air moving over the skin, warmth or coolness, and the softness or supportive firmness of the meditation cushion. You may experience pleasant sensations deeper in your muscles and joints as you relax, or warm feelings in your chest and abdomen. There may simply be an overall pleasant sense of stillness and peace. Whatever the sensations, enjoy and explore them freely. For a beginner, it can be hard to relax at first because your mind is agitated and your body is unaccustomed to staying still for long. When you start feeling restless or your sense of contentment fades, then thoughts, memories, and emotions will begin to stir. Don't get annoyed or try to suppress them. Instead, return to step one, broadening your awareness until you become fully present with everything happening in the moment again. In particular, seek out the pleasurable aspects of the present and try to reestablish and reinforce feelings of contentment and happiness. Repeat this process of backing off and starting over as often as needed until the mind can rest easily with your attention focused only on bodily sensations. There is no need to hurry on to the next step. If you never get past step two during your entire meditation session, that's perfectly fine. However, sometimes focusing in more can also help you settle down, so don't hesitate to try moving to the next step. You can always return to this one if narrowing your focus doesn't work. Step 3. Focus on bodily sensations related to the breath. As you sit quietly observing the body, your attention will naturally gravitate toward the sensations of movement produced by breathing, since little else changes while sitting quietly. As you tune in, start paying attention to all the different kinds of breath-related sensations. You will notice them especially around your nose, face, chest, and abdomen. You may find sensations of movement caused by the breath in your upper arms and shoulders or elsewhere. Take your time to become familiar with all these breath-related sensations. In particular, savor any pleasant qualities associated with them. You may notice the mind becomes mildly invigorated during the in-breath, while the out-breath feels more relaxing and soothing. Without suppressing anything else in your field of conscious awareness, restrict your attention to these breath-related sensations. Once you settle in, start focusing more directly on the sensations of the breath in specific areas. Closely observe the rise and fall of the abdomen, then the expansion and contraction of the chest, then the sensations produced by air moving in and out of the nostrils. Allow your mind to move freely among the abdomen, chest, nose, and anywhere else where you feel breath-related sensations. It's important to breathe naturally. Be a passive observer, noticing any sensations that happen to be present. You don't have to exaggerate the breath to make sensations easier to notice. If you want to perceive them more clearly, try imagining that you're looking at the place where the sensations are occurring. Let your eyes rest in a position that serves your imagination. But don't actually try to direct your eyes to the tip of your nose or your abdomen. That will just create discomfort. Your eyes will naturally tend to rest, as though they were looking at a point a few inches in front of your face. Nor should you visualize the area in your mind. Take note of, savor, and even purposely induce feelings of peace and happiness, especially as your attention becomes more stable and you experience more inner calm. Step 4. Focus on sensations of the breath at the nose. Now direct your attention to the sensations produced by the air moving in and out of your nostrils. Locate where those sensations are clearest, just inside the nostrils, at the tip of the nose, on the upper lip, or wherever else. The area may be as small as a pencil eraser or up to 2 inches across. Also, the location of sensations may not be quite the same for the in-and-out breaths. Keep your attention on the area where the breath sensations are clearest. Don't try to follow the air as it moves into the body or out of your nose. Just observe the sensations from the air passing over the spot where you're focusing your attention. Remember, the meditation object is the sensations of the breath, not the breath itself. Without intentionally suppressing anything from awareness, keep watching the sensations of the in and out breath. If your attention wanders, gently bring it back. And that's it. From this point on, the sensations of the breath at the tip of the nose will be your primary meditation object. Cultivating stable attention will continue all the way through stage 6. Developing exclusive attention is the final event in the process and won't happen before stage 6, so don't even concern yourself with it in the early stages. For now, your aim is just to tame the constant movements of attention, while at the same time trying to maintain peripheral awareness of things in the background. In other words, you want to develop stable attention with mindfulness. Counting as a method to stabilize attention. Counting your breaths at the start of a sit really helps stabilize your attention. If you're a novice, you should use this method all the time. Once you have moved through the 4 steps and attention is restricted to the breath at the nose, start silently counting each breath. Your goal will be to follow the sensations continuously for 10 consecutive breaths. When your attention slips or you lose track of the count, which will happen frequently at first, just start over again at 1. For now, consider your attention continuous if you've missed neither an inhale nor an exhale, nor lost count of your breaths. However, don't expect perfection. For a beginner, you're doing well if you're aware of most of the in-and-out breath. You can set higher standards for yourself as you become more skilled, but in the beginning, high standards are unreasonable and will only discourage you. Also, you won't be able to focus exclusively, single-pointedly, on the breath. In fact, trying to do so will only cause your mind to wander more. So expect to be aware of many other things as you're watching the breath. Finally, you're not trying for nonverbal or non-conceptual observation at this point. You can talk to yourself and think about the breath as much as you like while observing it, as long as you don't completely lose awareness of the actual sensations or lose track of the count. Interestingly, what you consider the start and end of a breath cycle matters. We automatically tend to regard the beginning as the inhale and the pause after the exhale as the end. However, if you're thinking about the breath in that way, then that pause becomes the perfect opportunity for your thoughts to wander off, since the mind naturally tends to shift focus when it has completed a task. Instead, try this. Consider the beginning of the out-breath as the start of the cycle. That way, the pause occurs in the middle of your cycle and is less likely to trip you up. This may seem like a small detail, but it often makes a difference. Another approach is to silently say the number during the pause at the end of the out-breath. This fills the gap and helps keep the mind on task. If you have started over many times without successfully reaching 10, change the goal to 5. Before long, 10 breaths will be easy. Once you've succeeded in counting to 5 or 10, keep observing the breath sensations, but stop counting. Counting quickly becomes automatic, and you can still forget the breath and have your mind wander while continuing to count. Therefore, counting beyond 10 breaths has little value. The rule is never more than 10, never less than 5. However, if your mind is particularly agitated or wanders again soon after you bring it back, do another 10 count when you return to the breath. Also, if your mind wanders for a long time, several minutes or more, once you become aware of it, don't immediately return to the breath at the nose. Rather, go back to step 2 and briefly focus on bodily sensations, then to step 3 and focus on breath sensations in general, and then start counting breaths at the nose. Even if you use a meditation object other than the breath, counting is still a wonderful way to transition from daily activities into a more focused meditative state. Just as with Pavlov's dogs, the mind becomes conditioned over time to counting as a sign to start meditating, and it will automatically calm down. Regardless of whether you're a beginner or an advanced meditator, I strongly recommend using counting as part of your regular practice. Counting will give you valuable information on the state of your mind and the distractions you're most likely to face. When you master stage 10, you will have effortless concentration before reaching the 10th breath. Summary of the basic practice. Sit down, close your eyes, and go through the 6-point preparation for meditation: motivation, goals, expectations, diligence, distractions, and posture. Then do the 4-step transition, gradually restricting the natural movements of your attention as you move from one step to the next. The transition needs to be gentle and gradual. Emphasize relaxation, peacefulness, and pleasure, rather than willpower and effort. When you reach step 4 and you're focusing on the breath at the nose, stabilize your attention by counting 5 or 10 breaths without interruption. When you're finished counting, keep attending to the sensations of the breath at the nose. The time it takes to work through this entire sequence varies from person to person and from one session to the next. For a novice, just moving through the 4-step transition may take most or all of the session. As you improve, you will proceed more quickly. Eventually, you will move through the 6 points and from the free-ranging attention of daily life to a stable focus on the meditation object in a matter of minutes or seconds. Establishing a practice. Now that you understand how to begin your practice, we'll focus on the primary goal of stage 1, establishing a regular daily practice. This may seem obvious, perhaps trivial, but few meditators, even those professing years of experience, maintain a truly consistent practice regimen. Yet to truly reap the many benefits of meditation, you must master this first stage by overcoming the obstacles and taking the necessary steps. Obstacles to establishing a practice. There are 4 major obstacles to overcome at this stage: not having enough time to meditate, procrastinating instead of sitting down to practice, reluctance and resistance to actually doing the practice, and doubt about your abilities. Time. Finding time to practice is your initial big challenge. When you first decide to take up meditation, you're naturally eager. Maybe you found inspiration from a book or a lecture. Perhaps you attended a meditation class or have a friend who meditates. At first, sheer enthusiasm helps you find time to practice. Yet, as your early excitement fades, you soon begin to feel the pressure of other demands. We will discuss some practical solutions for overcoming this obstacle, but the most effective antidote is actually quite simple. As you would do with anything else you're committed to, you must make the time to meditate. I don't know anyone who has established a meditation practice in his or her spare time. And besides, for most of us, spare time is rare. If you don't set a regular schedule, you most likely won't meditate. Make your practice a priority. Procrastination. Procrastination is one of the classic problems in meditation. Modern life tends to be busy, full of deadlines, and stressful. And maybe you started meditating to manage your stress better, only to find that practicing is just another demand on your overextended time and energy. When this happens, it's easy to say, "I'll meditate after I take care of such and such," or "I'll have more time to meditate tomorrow." This is why you must make practice a priority. Otherwise, you'll always find something more important to do first. Also, once you've been meditating regularly for a while, the after effects will make you more at ease and relaxed. Ironically, you will feel like you have more time, not less. Reluctance and resistance. The reason many turn to meditation is the promise of greater mindfulness and inner peace. However, when you sit down and discover how wild and uncontrollable your mind can be, you may easily get frustrated and conclude that meditation is all work and little reward. This is where reluctance and resistance to practice usually appear. Whereas procrastination keeps us from sitting down, reluctance and resistance lead us to spend our time on the cushion daydreaming, fantasizing, or making plans rather than actually meditating. In other words, you'll do almost anything to avoid what you now think is a boring, difficult, and unsatisfying task. The keys to overcoming reluctance and resistance are inspiration and motivation. When you first start practicing, you'll need to get your inspiration from somewhere else. However, once you start making progress, your own success provides motivation. Self-doubt. We tend to stick with activities we are naturally good at and avoid the ones we struggle with. When you discover you can't control your unruly mind, you may begin doubting your abilities. Maybe I'm different in some way, or just lack self-discipline. Or you might believe you aren't smart or spiritual enough for meditation. It's easy to think some inherent obstacle is holding you back, especially if you start comparing your experiences with what other people seem to be achieving. Yet the real obstacle is self-doubt, which is powerful and can rob you of your enthusiasm and determination to establish a regular practice. Without a regular practice, it will take a long time before you see any real improvement, which will only create more doubt. At the root of self-doubt is the classic hindrance of doubt explained in the second interlude. There you'll also find the explanation for how to deal with doubt. But the basic antidote is simple: trust and perseverance, which requires inspiration and motivation. Creating solutions. The most effective way to overcome both procrastination and reluctance and resistance to practicing is to just do it. Nothing works as quickly or effectively as diligence. The simple act of consistently sitting down and placing your attention on the meditation object day after day is the essential first step from which everything else in the 10 stages flows. Then, once seated, you must train yourself, gently and without self-judgment, to actually meditate rather than engage in some more entertaining mental activity. Notice that I said, train yourself. Not force or discipline yourself. Force, guilt, and willpower won't produce a sustainable practice, not least because of the negative emotions they stir up. Training yourself means working on your motivation and intentions until the simple acts of sitting down and meditating follow naturally. Then you repeat those activities every day until they turn into habits. Once you start practicing regularly, you will be surprised by how quickly meditation becomes easier and more gratifying. Diligence helps start you on your way. But the real solution to these obstacles is learning to enjoy your practice. One simple, powerful way to do that is to intentionally savor all feelings of physical comfort and deliberately cultivate the pleasure that can be found in quietness. Take satisfaction in the fact that you have actually sat down to meditate. That is an accomplishment in itself. Too often, people approach meditation as though they were taking medicine. It tastes bad, but they grin and bear it because it's supposed to be good for them. Instead, make meditation into a pleasurable activity. If you're at ease and happy, you will be more successful than if you're tense and straining. The more you succeed in seeking out the pleasant aspects of meditation, the more motivated you'll be and the more you will look forward to practicing. Everything else will fall into place. Doubt will disappear. You'll be inspired to meditate and can find plenty of time for it. Once you taste the joy and pleasure of practice, procrastination and resistance vanish. You'll look forward to your time on the cushion and guard it as something precious. As you progress to the higher stages, you won't just deliberately cultivate joy. It will eventually become your default state of mind. The practical steps. Along with just doing it and learning to savor your meditations, there are some practical steps to establishing a regular practice. These include choosing a suitable time and place, finding the best posture for you, cultivating the right attitude, and generating strong motivation. Setting a time and place. Ideally, you should meditate at the same time every day. You learn to associate that time with meditation and are less likely to procrastinate because you don't have to decide when to meditate. Choose a period that doesn't conflict with other activities and obligations. You may have to make some adjustments to your daily schedule. If the same time is simply impossible, pick a place in your normal routine, for example, before breakfast or after your regular exercise, that will be the same each day. Having a fixed period, whether set by the clock or your daily routine, is the best way to become consistent. Beginning meditators often forget to take their mental energy and clarity into account when picking a regular time to practice. Choose when you tend to be least agitated or tired. Everyone has their own natural rhythms, but generally the best time is early morning, or at least before 1 p.m. Most people prefer the period shortly after waking up in the morning, but before breakfast, since it's best to avoid meditating right after a meal. Next best is late afternoon or early evening. Early to mid-afternoon is often the hardest. The easiest way to make time for practice is by getting up a little earlier. You will feel refreshed and alert, and family and friends will be less likely to disturb you. Also, your mind won't be agitated by the stress and activity of daily life. Of course, getting up earlier only works if you go to bed earlier. No matter what time of day you choose, you'll have to make adjustments in other parts of your life to keep your commitment to practicing. It's an inescapable fact that the time you spend meditating is time you could have used for something else. If you don't make meditation a priority over some other activities, it just won't happen. Begin with shorter meditations. I suggest 15 or 20 minutes each day for the first week or two. Then increase the length of your sessions in 5-minute increments weekly or every few days until you reach 45 minutes. Use a meditation timer rather than looking at a clock, and train yourself not to look at the timer. Just listen for the bell. Some people find it easier to do 2 shorter meditations of 20 to 30 minutes each day. This is fine at first, but I strongly recommend at least 1 daily 45-minute sit as a minimum. This will provide a solid basis for your practice. As you advance through the stages and gain more skill, your meditations will become more interesting and enjoyable. You will eventually have no problem extending 45 minutes into an hour and practicing more than once a day if you choose. It's always best to work up gradually rather than do too much at first and become discouraged. Once you have chosen a schedule, treat meditation like any other time-related commitment, such as work or school. Spend the designated period meditating and do nothing else. Make sure others know you will be unavailable at that time of day. To start with, you may encounter some resistance from your family or anyone not used to you being unavailable, but they will learn to adjust and may even decide to join you in practicing, especially when they start to notice the results of your practice. Most importantly, remind yourself that meditation time is your time, which you have set aside for yourself, a time free from the demands of the world. Considering how much meditation will improve your relationships with others, you shouldn't regard it as selfish. This personal time will ultimately benefit everyone you come in contact with. Also, if possible, practice with someone else. His or her commitment will reinforce yours, and vice versa. However, if you have clearly established your intention, but your practice partner hasn't, it's better to end the practice arrangement. Meditation groups provide especially strong support, but usually don't meet every day. Finally, creating a regular place for meditation is just as important as setting a regular time. Choose a comfortable space where you won't be disturbed. It should be quiet and secluded enough to feel like your special meditation spot. The ideal situation is to have a place just for meditating. However, if that's not possible, it can also be a space you use for other things when you're done. But it should be a place where you can keep your meditation cushions, a shawl, or anything else you might use. Design and decorate it in ways that inspire you and remind you of why you're meditating and what you hope to gain. Some people like to set up an altar as well. It doesn't matter if it's religious or not. Its purpose is to inspire and motivate you in your practice. The right posture. Any comfortable position works for meditation, as long as it's not so comfy that you fall asleep. There are four traditional meditation postures: sitting, standing, walking, and lying down. They all work, and none is more correct than the others. Here, we'll focus on some pointers to help you find a good sitting position. You can meditate sitting in a chair, on a meditation bench, or on the floor. Full lotus position, legs crossed with your feet on top of your knees, provides a very stable position and helps keep you alert, but it's not necessary for success. Also, if you aren't flexible enough to sit in full lotus easily, it can cause serious injury. The half lotus position, with legs crossed and only one foot on top of the opposite knee, is likewise very stable, yet it, too, is not easy for many adult Westerners. The most popular meditation posture is probably sitting on the floor on a zafu, a Japanese-style round cushion, legs crossed, with ankles slightly tucked under the opposite thigh or knee. Alternatively, both knees and lower legs can be flat on the floor, one in front of the other, the so-called Burmese style. Low Japanese-style meditation benches, called seiza, are often used. If sitting on the floor proves difficult, then sit on a regular straight-backed chair. Experiment with different postures before deciding which you prefer. Also, there are many ways to fine-tune any position using pads and pillows, lumbar supports, meditation belts, or straps, height adjustments, and so on. Regardless of the position you choose, it's important there be as little physical strain or pain as possible, especially during longer sits. Expect some aches and pains merely from staying still, but try to minimize pain in general and don't aggravate pre-existing injuries. Regard the discomforts that remain as part of your practice. By observing them, you'll learn how your body and mind interact. And be patient. As your practice develops, it will get easier to sit. Eventually, you will be able to sit for hours without any discomfort. You'll even get up feeling quite good, without any stiffness or numbness. Remain as still as you can during sitting meditation, despite any discomfort. This can be challenging for a beginner, but always wait as long as you can before moving. Then, don't stop meditating when you change position, but rather move slowly and deliberately, with full attention to the sensations in your body as you shift. You will likely discover that although whatever caused you to move in the first place has disappeared, another irritating sensation, possibly more intense, soon takes its place. You simply can't overcome all physical discomfort by adjusting your posture. The right attitude. To succeed, we need to approach the practice in a relaxed manner, free from judgment and expectations. Although we may start out this way, we can quickly slip into a critical, striving attitude when faced with problems such as mind-wandering, sleepiness, and impatience. This attitude becomes the greatest impediment to our continued progress. When words like struggle or difficult come to mind, or if you feel like you're trying really hard but not making any progress, you'll know it's time to examine your attitude. Meditation is a series of simple tasks, easy to perform, that only need to be repeated until they bear fruit. So where is the sense of difficulty and exertion coming from? We usually describe a task as difficult because we're dissatisfied with our performance, which means we've started judging. Your expectations haven't been met, and maybe you're starting to doubt whether you'll ever succeed, which can sap your motivation. You're not actually struggling with meditating. You're struggling with unrealistic expectations and an idealized image of what you think should be happening. As a result, it feels like you're forcing yourself to do something you think you aren't very good at. If you believe those feelings, the ego's self naturally wants to avoid blame. If you can convince yourself that you've been trying really hard, then the ego self doesn't feel guilty for not meeting its own self-imposed expectations. You can blame the teacher, the method, or concoct a story about how meditation isn't right for you. The real issue isn't that meditation takes too much effort or that something is innately wrong with you. It's your judgment and expectations. So let go of expectations and generate an attitude of faith, trust, and confidence. Faith in the method, trust that the results will come with continued practice, and confidence in your own ability. Joyful effort and diligence are the right attitude. Rather than striving, focus on the positive, pleasant elements of each session, joyfully repeating the same simple tasks as many times as needed to achieve the goal. This is precisely what diligence means. With spiritual practice in general, and meditation in particular, small measures repeated consistently produce huge results. The only place for great effort in meditation is in adjusting your schedule to actually spend more time practicing. Realize there are no failures in meditation except for actually failing to do the practice. As fellow teacher Stephanie Nash is fond of saying, a good meditation is one you did. The only bad meditation is one you didn't do. Take her wise advice to heart. Staying motivated. You wouldn't be hearing this right now if you weren't somehow inspired to explore meditation. Keep yourself inspired and find new sources of encouragement. Make a point of frequently reminding yourself why you decided to meditate and what the benefits are. Reflect on the admirable qualities of experienced meditators you know. Read books, go to lectures, and listen to recorded talks. Think about how you and everyone around you will benefit from your practice. Do all you can to stay motivated, just as you would if beginning an exercise program or learning to play an instrument. Also, support and inspire others, and let them support and inspire you. Practice with friends who share your interest in meditation, and set aside one day each week to get together for sitting, study, and discussion. Look into local meditation and Dharma groups, or start your own. As the Buddha once told his disciple Ananda, noble friends and companions are the whole of the holy life. When you feel you're ready to try more intensive practice, attend an organized retreat. Conclusion. You have mastered stage one when you never miss a daily practice session, except when absolutely unavoidable, and when you rarely, if ever, procrastinate on the cushion by thinking and planning or doing something besides meditating. This stage is the most difficult to master, but it can be done in a few weeks. By following the basic instructions and cultivating the right attitude, you will develop joyful effort and diligence and establish a regular daily practice. The time and effort put into mastering this stage will pay off far beyond anything you can imagine. Here, monks, a monk goes to the forest, to the foot of a tree, or to an empty place, sits down, folds his legs crosswise, keeps his body erect, and brings mindful awareness to the fore. With mindfulness, he breathes in. With mindfulness, he breathes out. Anapanasati Sutta.